WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis in for Julie Glenn. The citrus greening epidemic has wiped out millions of acres of citrus plants around the world. The bug that spreads, it first arrived in Florida in 1998, and the disease was first detected in trees here in 2005. Once a tree is infected, there is no cure. On one side, researchers are looking at ways to keep the trees healthy in spite of citrus greening. But on the other side is the war against the bug that carries the bacteria from tree to tree. It's called a psyllid. Later this hour, we'll listen back to a Gulf Coast Live conversation from earlier this year with the entomologist known as the psyllid slayer, Phil Stansley. But first, we're putting a spotlight on the issue of domestic violence. Rates of reported domestic violence in the U.S. have actually declined by nearly three quarters over the past two decades, but physical and psychological domestic abuse remains a prevalent and often hidden problem. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, nearly one in four women and one in seven men have suffered from domestic violence by an intimate partner. Here in the Sunshine State, the Florida Coalition Against Domestic Violence reports that in 2014, more than 106,000 crimes of domestic violence were reported in the state, leading to more than 64,000 arrests. Also, according to the CDC, the estimated cost of intimate partner violence against women exceeds more than $8.3 billion. That was in 2003. This includes direct costs such as medical and mental health treatment and indirect costs such as lost productivity in the workplace. That estimate does not include costs associated with the criminal justice system, so the actual cost could be much higher. Domestic violence recently made headlines in our region after the arrest of the ex-husband of Cape Coral Mayor Marnie Sawicki on charges of domestic battery. And Mayor Sawicki told the news press at that time, quote, "If it can happen at a very high-profile mayor's conference, it's happening to millions every day," end quote. And despite the very personal and vulnerable nature of today's conversation, Mayor Sawicki is joining us in studio in hopes that her experience can encourage other assault victims to reach out for help. Cape Coral Mayor Marnie Sawicki, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We're also speaking with Christine Kobe. She's a violence prevention educator with ACT Abuse Counseling and Treatment in Fort Myers, where she's been providing prevention-based community education for more than 11 years. Christine Kobe, thanks for your time today and welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
I invite listeners to join the conversation as well with your comments and questions. Call 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Comment on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. Or on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And Christine Kobe, I wanted to start with you. First of all, can we just define the term? When we say domestic violence, what are we actually talking about?
Many people look at that as being something that is mainly physical. But we have to look at also the verbal, the emotional, the mental. All of those different types of behaviors that precede anything that would become physical, including the fear of it becoming physical.
All right. And you know, I gave some sobering statistics at the beginning there just now about the prevalence of domestic violence. But many victims feel, you know, alone and isolated. Is letting people know that they're really not alone an important part of getting help?
I think it is, because it is so isolating and you know, there's a stigma attached to it that blames the victim, and I think that that keeps them from coming forward as well. We really need to change that.
All right. And you know, we know that every relationship dynamic between an abuser and a victim is unique. But are there some general patterns that we can highlight about the nature of these relationships? And I'm, you know, thinking about, you know, terms I learned back in middle school, like, you know, the honeymoon phase and the cycle of violence.
Yeah, there's a cycle of violence. There's also a what's known as the campaign of violence as well. And that's just basically taking this concept that there's always a desire to maintain or gain the power and control over their partner. And they can do that through this cycle, which is, you know, starting off as that tension, some sort of conflict that's about to happen. And then going into that abuse phase. Now, many people, again, they don't look at the verbal and emotional as abuse, so they skip that. You know, they're not paying attention to it as being a cycle. And then, of course, we go into the makeup. And even the actions, the behaviors that are going on within the makeup phase can actually be abusive, sometimes more than the abuse phase itself. They can include minimize, denying, blaming the victim. They can be threats. I mean, it really is different for each individual, but there's a lot of things that they all have in common as well.
And, you know, for those who haven't experienced domestic violence, I'm glad you said what you just did. You know, the idea that victims, you know, would choose not to report the violence and would choose to, you know, stay in, a toxic relationship just sounds like a crazy concept. I was hoping you could maybe give us some insight into, you know, why victims perhaps stay in some of these relationships for as long as they do, and maybe some of the ways that abusers work to keep the status quo.
Okay, so for one thing, anyone that's out there can Google this as an image, and it's called the power and control wheel. And that wheel is so empowering for a victim to, or even family or friend, to be able to learn all of the various ways that an individual would use to control their partner. Once we understand those pieces of it, I think it becomes a little harder to stay because we can't continue pretending. And it becomes more difficult to maintain that hope that the behaviors will eventually change, because they won't.
Right, right.
The only change that's going to happen is that it's going to increase. It's going to get worse.
So I guess I don't want to take the focus here off of, you know, victims, but do we know much about what causes an abuser to become an abuser?
We so do. I'm so glad you asked. It's that need for power and control. It's not alcohol. It's not substance abuse. It's not anger management. Those are two totally different things. It's a need for power and control. There are some root causes. We can look at sexism. We can look at the institutionalized ideas of gender roles. We can see all of these other foundational pieces, but the main issue is the power and control, the need for the power and control, or the desire for the power and control. And that is something that's internal. That's a belief system. Those are attitudes that, you know, that we as leaders in the community that have a voice, that we need to be able to and get other people on board with changing those attitudes and beliefs in our area.
So you'd say this is primarily learned behavior, socialized behavior, rather than something innate in the person.
Correct. But instead of saying learned behavior, we're actually putting more responsibility back on the individuals who are teaching it. It's a taught behavior.
So would you say it's safe to say maybe a lot of abusers perhaps grew up in homes where they, you know, maybe witnessed some sort of violence, you know, against a parent, and it's just maybe something that they've always grown up with?
Yeah, that's very common. It's hard to undo that. It's hard to unlearn. You can't unlearn anything. You just have to learn something in addition and then make a choice from that. But you still have to be taught different behaviors. So for a child who witnesses domestic violence in the home, the percentage of them repeating it is so high. We really have to put that responsibility back on those teachers who are teaching this unhealthy and violent behavior.
And conversely, do abuse victims, perhaps as children or people, again, who see a parent abused, then maybe sort of mimic that same sort of relationship dynamic in their adult relationships?
They're taught to tolerate it.
Yeah.
They're taught to accept. They're taught to stay committed, whatever that word means to different people. They're taught to maintain that hope and to continue believing that their partner is going to change their behavior.
Can you tell us a bit, you know, while we're on this topic, about ACT's BAN program? Because I think it was interesting that, you know, it's something that you provide. I guess, is this for abusers who want to get help, or is this voluntary? Is this court ordered? How does it work?
It's both. It's court ordered and it's voluntary. So it's used as a diversion program. Now, every area has a batterer's intervention program. And in the majority of situations, I would say that the perpetrator of the violence is actually court ordered to take it. Very few people, you know, raise their hand and admit to their own abusive behaviors and saying that it's wrong. They actually believe that what they're doing is right and that they have a right. They have this entitlement to treat the other person as an object, as their own, as property, that they can do whatever they want to.
All right. Well, let's take a call now from Terry in Cape Coral. Terry, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Hi, thank you.
Oh, Carrie, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. So I had a question about, I'm new to Southwest Florida from Illinois, and I was a former police officer up there, very involved in domestic violence. And we had been, myself and our police social workers, had been really trying to get a DVERT, a domestic violence enhanced response team, going up there. I didn't know if you were aware of that. And I was just wondering if something like that is being considered down here in Southwest Florida. Is it being done, essentially involving the police, the courts, the education system, everybody kind of wrapping around to help fight this issue?
We do have those pieces, but I don't know how connected we are as working as a team in the way that you're talking about. What you're talking about sounds great, and we do have these task force. We do meet, but I think we still have some work to do there. It could be stronger.
Okay. I was just thinking that, you know, given the high-profile case, that maybe this might be a good opportunity to try and work on that.
Thank you. I think that's a great idea.
South of Florida.
Thank you much,
Carrie.
All right,
thanks.
And Marnie Sawicki, you know, we're not going to get into the details of you know, your personal life about what happened, but I did want to ask because I feel like this is a crucial moment in any abuse victim's life is, you know, you have taken the resolved position of, you know, this is done. And I'm not going to be ashamed. And I guess I just want to ask about what led you to finally just say enough.
My kids had a big piece of that. They're typically in the last 4 years, they haven't really witnessed anything. I mean, usually it's I share custody, so it happens on the weeks that they're not there. Mm-hmm. This time, it just so happened that they were at the hotel with us and. Witnessed probably more than I would ever want them to see. So when I'm working through this, obviously as Christine can explain victim bait behavior, you know, I obviously love the man. I do. And it's almost like a death, you know, going through a grieving process of having to get of just knowing that I can never go back. But I promised one thing I said to my kids was, you know, I know my words have not always followed up by the actions of he keeps coming back. So I can only show over time, but I can guarantee them that they mean more to me than anything in this world. And because of that, I will never see him again. It's not really an option for me. Right. And I choose them every day of the week. And that is why I think that's helping me at least a little bit with the resolve of I don't want to reach out. And now I'm starting to get the anger and you know, try to channeling that into some direction, which is why I'm so happy that you're having a talk like this that I hope it continues such on a greater level between all of our cities and our county, because it is absolutely a very shameful thing for anyone to go through. And especially, and I think there's some statistics, but I think the amount of strong women that go through it is really high or fairly high because it's almost like a Mustang they're trying to break. And since having this go public, I have been reached out. I've had people reach out to me that I don't know that are in the same situation, 4 emails just one day. I've had high-profile women that have emailed me since then saying they've been in this situation and no one knew. And that to me just starts to speak volumes of it doesn't know, you know, any education level. It doesn't know income. It doesn't know any of that. It is truly a cycle that people get into or learned or whatever, because obviously, you know, I grew up in a home that had abuse. And while I don't do it, I'm on the other side where I accept it or it's the norm. You know, how do you get out of that normal? What is normal? So, but that is why. And that – my children. Right. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, you've been quoted in a local paper saying that you refuse to be ashamed. And I wonder if there's kind of like this sort of reluctant embrace that you've had to take on just – because these types of situations they're very vulnerable, they're very personal, and they're usually very private matters, and you have not been afforded that.
No, and I'll tell you, the last time I filed the injunction, that is what kept me from going forward with it. I had the initial resolve that I was going to take care of it. And then with the immense media pressure and showing up at my court date to have all the reporters on the corner and three of my council members at my injunction hearing, you know, there for the defendant, it was just more than I was able to – I wasn't able to be strong enough. And I thought, well, you know what? He learned his lesson. You know, well, he says he's learned his lesson and this isn't going to happen again. And he'd never laid his hand on me up until this event. So
what do you want to say to people out there, you know, people who have been abused before or are in an abusive relationship or situation now? Or is there anything, you know, perhaps you wish you had done differently that you would want to impart on them?
You know, I have friends and I know my friends have seen, you know, now they like to tell me, I saw this, I saw this, I saw this happening. And I think there's a point where if you're seeing it with someone, you need to, if they're not speaking to you, you need to reach out to them. You need to see the signs, start recording the signs, start whatever you can to help them see that the cycle that they're in, because they're not documenting it. And I wasn't documenting it. And, you know, but yet my friends are quick to say, and I love them and I don't, but, you know, you've been here before. Well, remember this. Do you remember this? No, because I didn't write it down. But if they may have, and if they had done that and was able to show me that earlier on, just the intervention piece from all, it's everyone's responsibility and that are in those people's lives. So it's very difficult. And I guess until this came public, this time is when I said I have to speak out because it needs to be over. And if I'm ashamed, if I'm going to have all this information and all this attention, well, then I want people to also understand that there's help out there and there's places to go like ACT that will walk them through the process and help them get back on their feet. And there's so many services that they provide that I've had even elected officials ask me, I know about them. Okay, well, what do they provide? And that was just yesterday. And as I start to explain to them, you know, it's for women that, you know, the women and men that shelter. They have clothes vouchers. They have food. I mean, there's things that they can provide these people and a hotline, counselors, you name it. And they said, so how is it paid for? I mean, this is a very, very prominent, you know, ACT is something that's been around, and I thought everybody knew about it. But if I didn't, if that's the case, then we have others out there that are being victims that have no idea they're there, and they need to know.
Well, Mayor Sawicki, you've given me the perfect segue. You know, Christine Coby, tell us just more about the scope of services available through ACT Abuse Counseling and Treatment.
So we have the shelter, as you mentioned, and that's. You know, every client that comes in to stay is given a caseworker, and they work on a case plan to become independently safe within about 6 to 8 weeks. And so whatever is standing in their way at that point, that's what we're going to work on with them, whether it be job, education, childcare, moving out of state if they need to, just whatever it is that they need to feel safe. We also provide the counseling. So, but that does not mean that someone has to stay in shelter. Even if someone's not ready to leave yet, I always use the word ready. You know, people will leave eventually. They'll be done eventually.
It's but averaged to seven times.
Right.
So
we need to get them. We need to get them where they are. We need to meet them where they're at and provide the services that they need for their current situation. So if they're you know, not ready to come into shelter, not ready to leave, we can still do counseling with them. And we're not in the business of breaking up families either. You know, we don't provide family counseling or couples counseling, but we can certainly make those referrals. And we do our counseling with our clients. And, you know, we have the hotline that we answer 24/7. So anyone out there that's listening right now, you're laying awake at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning and you just want to talk it out with someone or ask some questions, please give us a call. We're, you know, someone's always there. We're on Facebook. We have a website. So there's a lot of information also on the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence website. So if you have a friend Certainly educate yourself on things to say, not say, signs to look for. And I think that you made a really good point about documenting, you know, what you see in your friends and your family members. That's so important because survivors of this type of life, you know, whatever is going on, they're trying to get to the makeup phase as fast as possible. Mm. They're not paying attention to the other phases that are going on. And again, they're trying to maintain that hope and just survive. So it's easy to forget all that bad stuff. And it's a lot harder to heal and to go through it than it is to stay.
And
let
me
just, lot of courage.
And I want to say too, you know, I do have some video audio that I have for hopefully the trial. But even if I hadn't watched it in 3 days, and then when I started to watch it, you forget. It's your brain has an amazing ability to help you cope, mm-hmm. and you forget those things. It puts it out of your mind, the things that you've experienced, or how that what he said, or how it made me feel. And then to see it again kind of took me right back there. Most victims don't have that. And so exactly, they start mm-hmm. to forget. They start to minimize. Maybe it was me. I mean, it's a million things.
Right. And, you know, just one last question here before we run out of time. But, you know, I know you'd also talked about pursuing some sort of legislation to help victims. Is there anything specific you had in mind, or is this just something you, you know, maybe want to look into more in the future?
No, I have a few quite specific, but I started documenting this from probably day two on of my experience and just what's I've gone through. And, you know, even just getting an injunction. I was telling Christine before we started that if I was a mother of young children and I depended on my husband and I couldn't get off work and, you know, but only could be at the courthouse from 8:30 to 2 and then you have to come back and maybe you'll get granted, you don't know. And then if I could not get the time off work and I needed to determine if I'm putting food on the table for my kids or I'm going to go finish this injunction, I would probably just say, you know, forget it. I'm not going to file it. And I know that's what happens a lot of times. So we somehow have to be in the courts and how all that works, figuring out how do we save a life today? Because that is every one of those that leave. I don't know the actual statistics on domestic violence and murder. Do you have that?
And homicides, I don't have that. But I know that they increase when a person is trying to escape and they don't have a safety plan. So if you – again, if you are listening, you know, and you're thinking about leaving, please call the hotline and at least get a safety plan going first before you do that.
What is that number?
It's 939-3112.
Perfect. That is fortunately all the time we have for this portion of this program, but you know, I could keep going with the two of you for another hour, I'm sure. But thanks to my guests, Cape Coral Mayor Marnie Sawicki, thanks so much for speaking so candidly with us and for sharing your experience and your strength.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Also, thanks to Christine Kobe, violence prevention educator with Act Abuse Counseling and Treatment in Fort Myers. For more information or to seek help, you can find them online at actabuse.com or again by calling their 24-hour hotline. That's 239-939-3112. We're taking a short break, but when we return, an encore presentation of our conversation with entomologist Phil Stansley, known as the Psyllid Slayer. He's working to combat the invasive bug that spreads the greatest threat to Florida's citrus industry now, citrus greening disease. I'm John Davis, and this is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. Stay with us.